Good morning to all of you. I really appreciate you guys choosing our session when you had so many other options so early in the morning. I'll be taking a presentation a little bit further following what Dr. Shankaran presented, so keeping in mind the theme of the session, infectious immigration. I'll be covering a little bit about how immigration, when we have this issue, when we have people who are immigrating to different countries, what threat or what role does it play with regard to infectious diseases? What are some of the challenges in developed countries where usually the immigrant population walks through? And then we'll discuss some of the challenges and some recommended actions. I do want to present that there are no relationships or other disclosures. This is a brief outline what our presentation will be. I'll provide you a little bit of brief about the topic, what are the type of immigrants, what are some of the health challenges they pose, what are the policies in place, and some of the challenges that we face with the changing economy and the changing healthcare system. Approximately 175 million people, that is approximately 3% of the world population, currently lives temporarily or permanently outside their country of origin. This is what we regard as immigration. In most of the developed countries, we see immigration happening from other countries. But when we take this issue to developing countries, there is also internal migration, which we are not covering in this session. But that could also be one of the areas to look into when we talk about infectious diseases. In U.S., non-citizen minorities who do not speak English are more likely to be uninsured than other minorities. And this is when I mentioned this, we do have minorities in the United States. There are certain populations or certain groups that are regarded as minorities, but here we are talking about people who migrate from other countries or regions and do not speak or are not very fluent with English. And usually illegal immigrants are the group of people who have no medical screening and they are at higher risk of spreading contagious and infectious diseases. What kind of population does US have? We have about 80,000 refugees, about 500,000 immigrants, 39 million non-immigrants, and short-term transit people that are 35 million and other categories which comprise 4 million. Basically, there are two types of immigrant population when we talk about immigrants or people migrating to other countries. One of them are regular. What would a regular immigrant mean? It usually means a group of people whose entry, residence, and employment is in a host country has been recognized and authorized. You come for a job or you come for education and you stay for the duration that you're officially designed to stay and you do not overstay or do not violate your visa rules or the stay of duration. Irregular or undocumented people are the group of people who have entered a host country without legal authorization or those who overstay the authorized entry. I would like to, when we are talking about infectious diseases and immigration population, I'll try to cover some of the issues, some of the diseases that we think are almost eradicated in developed countries. But because of immigration, because of people coming from other countries who are susceptible to these diseases, some of the diseases do show up in developed countries. One of the excellent examples is tuberculosis, hereafter referred as TB. Incidence of tuberculosis in El Paso County is twice that of United States. TB and illnesses like TB have been eradicated in most of the developed countries, including US. But because of immigration, because of international travel and people migrating to this country, there has been 57.8% of all new cases of TB have been diagnosed in foreign-born people. And TB infection rate is 9.8 times higher among foreign-born people compared to people born in the US. Leprosy is still considered a disease of the third world country and recently has been very evident among the U.S. in the region around U.S.-Mexico border. The pork tapeworm, which thrives in Latin America and Mexico, is also starting to show up along U.S. border, again because that's the area where people would mostly migrate to this country, and this is the population that is more exposed to, has higher number of cases of these diseases. And this gives a threat to the victim with symptoms ranging from seizures to death. This is a table a little bit hard to read probably on the screen, but I would be more than happy to share a presentation if anyone is interested in knowing the details. We can see that, from which country of origin, which is the total number of population living in the United States and the prevalence of this trichoma infection, an estimated number of immigrants with the cases in that population. And we can see that the highest number is from Mexico. Some of the factors that affect emergence in infectious diseases is international trade and commerce, human demographics and behavior. It has been changing. People have been trying to move to place where they can have a much better living status and more earning power. Poverty and social inequality, when people move to this country, following up what some of the cultural factors Dr. Shankaran covered previous to my presentation, that there are the reasons they don't speak language, they don't get the best jobs available, and that increases poverty and social inequality, war and famine, breakdown of public health measures, lack of political will, which is very prominent topic right now with the new immigration reform and what impact would it have on various healthcare issues. One of them very much in the talks right now is child vaccinations. As such, United States, many of the parents are not, you know, adhering to the vaccination status, and it is going to be even more difficult to collect and make sure that the immigrant population, their children are vaccinated and they are not at risk of spreading as well as contacting infections, and economic development and land use. Some of the risk factors also involve the language. Most of this immigrant population do not speak the language of the country they migrate to as soon as they reach there, and that could be one of the reasons for barriers to seeking healthcare and not having knowledge to what are the services available. For example, if they move from a country and TB was very prevalent there, they do not have enough knowledge to move to a new country and get a TB test done, what involves in getting the test done, where are the places where they can get that done. It's a limited understanding of care-seeking behavior and also of the U.S. healthcare system. Many of them would not know that they are, if they even, you know, came on a legal document, that there are services that they are entitled to receive, you know, primary health care or preventive health care or prenatal care or immunization. So not having understanding of U.S. healthcare systems become another challenge, and fear or apprehension by immigration authorities. Many a times these people have come on illegal documents or have overstayed their duration that they're supposed to be staying legally. That becomes another challenge. How do they seek care? Even if they have knowledge or they know the resources, they would not be able to go and seek care because of the fear of immigration authorities. And underutilization of preventive medicines, as I just mentioned, immunization is one of the biggest threats right now. It also, when we talk about immigration and healthcare system, when we talk about immigration and healthcare system, we also have to see that it not only has an effect on the health status of the population, but it also has an effect on the cost of medical care, which we all know we are experiencing a much higher healthcare cost in the United States right now. 43% of non-citizens under 65 have no health insurance. So when these people, this group of people, ultimately fall sick or are seriously, you know, seeking medical care, the burden, the economic burden, does come to the taxpayers. Use of hospital and emergency services rather than preventive health care also increases the utilization of hospitals by illegal immigrants. Some of the challenges is to provide access to healthcare for immigrants should be a national issue, and it should be addressed with a national policy. Individual state laws will not be adequate to deal with this problem, and we do need a policy at the national level where we can address this issue. We have to encourage all residents to obtain clinically effective vaccinations and screening for prevalent infectious diseases. Now we know that this group of population is already present among us. Rather than ignoring them, it would be very essential that at least the preventive services for infectious diseases are taken care of, because not only are we putting that group of population at risk, but we are risking ourselves as well, those who are legal, those who are the U.S. citizens as well. Some of the recommendations are increased need for international public health, active surveillance, trying to remove language barriers, introducing access to healthcare not restricted on immigration status, and immigration policy should not foster discrimination against a class or category of patients. Increase access to comprehensive healthcare and develop new and innovative strategies to support safety net healthcare facilities. And this is my contact information. I really want to thank you for your time and attention, and any questions and suggestions, I'd be open after everyone has presented. Thank you once again.